11C.
Alrighty, 11C, this is one more appointment. This is for a scheduled vacancy on the Public Health Solid Waste Hearing Panel. This is the technical position. This would be for a 4-year term ending December 6th, 2026. Let's see, and this one is, the clerk's office, we did post the notice of vacancy as well as it sending it to the library county website and to the newspapers and news.com. This one is for a technical position. Morgan Eastlick was originally in that position. He has served his the most term he can serve, so we were unable to reappoint him. But at the time the agenda worksheet was created, the clerk's office received a letter of interest from Jose Hernandez. He's a professional engineer, and it would be qualified in that position to serve.
Wishes of board members? I'll make the motion.
Second.
And that's to appoint Mr. Hernandez?
Yes.
Thank you. Okay. Supervisor Howe?
Aye.
Supervisor Kopseth?
Aye.
Supervisor Valenzuela?
Sure.
Supervisor Ogren?
Aye.
And Supervisor Chris?
Aye. I think minute approval will be quick, so we'll do minute approval.
Yep, I've received no corrections.
Move approval.
Second.
Hang on. And that was for both minutes?
Yes.
Thank you. All righty. Supervisor Help?
Aye.
Supervisor Cobson?
Aye.
Supervisor Valenzuela?
Aye.
Supervisor Ogren?
Aye.
And Supervisor Chris?
Aye. We'll now open public hearing for item 13G, the housing element. My apologies, when I came in, I was looking at my paper, not looking up at who was in the room. I'm going to call on you guys first to be done with.
Okay.
I was looking at my paper. So we'll all call it open. We'll call it open. And presentation of staff report. And just for those online, I think the screen gets shared, but we're truly not doing kit or crick right now. But item the housing element. It just happened to be what opened up online. It was next in line, so just the way it worked out, but we're not doing kit or crick.
Hello, so Haley Lang, Planning Director. I'll just provide a quick introduction. We have James Coles here from Housing Tools, and that is the consulting firm that helped us prepare the housing element, which we are statutorily required to do. But before I hand over a presentation to him, I just wanted to make a note on the staff report for this item under recommended action. There is a typo. It currently reads, as detailed in the attached resolution, the board of approved the draft. It should be the board of supervisors approved the draft. So I just wanted to make that note. But once we get the presentation up, I will hand this over to James.
Hello, good to be with you.
Mr. James, if you could just go up to the podium. Or we can move the microphone over there if you need to lay that out.
Just move over here. All right, good to be with you. James Coles with Housing Tools. And Serena Wright from Housing Tools is also here to help answer any questions. I'll provide a overview of the housing element here. So we can go to the next slide. And this is the outline that we'll go over today. We'll provide an overview of the purpose of the housing element. We'll talk about the regional housing needs allocation, which is a fundamental part of the housing element. We'll summarize major legislative changes impacting the housing element, go over the adequate sites inventory, the housing needs assessment, some key actions that are part of the housing program, and then we'll go to questions and comments from commissioners and the public. Next slide. We can go forward one more. So the overview for the housing element is that it is an 8-year cycle planning document to establish housing goals for citizens of the county. Unincorporated county. It sets goals for the allocation of funding, program coordination, and zoning efforts to support the production of housing. and is one of the mandated elements of the county's general plan. It must be consistent with the general plan. Next slide. The existing and expiring housing element period was from 2014 to 2021, and the current housing element update period is from 2022 to 2030. The housing element has oversight from the State Department of Housing and Community Development. They certify the housing elements, and the certification approval provides access to state funding for various programs. And since 2014, the state has amended the housing element law through numerous bills, and we will summarize some of them, which place additional responsibility on local jurisdictions. And you'll see that reflected in the housing program. Next slide. These are the sections and the mandated topics of the housing element. So we have the public participation process, the review of the previous housing element progress, the housing needs assessment, the adequate sites inventory, the financial inventory, constraints analysis, an assessment of fair housing, and the goals, objectives, and actions. Next. So the regional housing needs allocation is a key part of the housing element. This is an allocation of units by income level that are set as a goal for the housing element and mandated through the state. These are the units that must be planned for to accommodate future growth, and that's calculated by HCD. So this is the RENA, or the Regional Housing Needs Allocation, for 2014 through the 2021 planning period. This goes through 2020. You'll see that there's an estimated need for units that are affordable by income level, which is listed on the left. And then in the next column over, the Regional Housing Needs Allocation, and the next column over, the units produced, and then the percentage of RENA produced. So in the last planning period, there was an allocation of 65 units for both very low and extremely low income. They require that to be split 50-50 between the two. And then 40 for low, 43 for moderate, and 110 for above moderate. The units produced were 93 in the above moderate category, which is 85% of the RENA in that income level. Next slide. And you'll see that the regional housing needs allocation for this housing element period of 2022 through 2030 is much different than the previous, in that the RENA is one very low income and low, one very low income unit and one low income unit total, so only two units. Next slide. Now we'll go over some major legislative changes that impact this housing element, and there have been many over the last 5 years or so. Next. So these laws relate to accessory dwelling units. There's been a strong push at the state level to encourage the production of accessory dwelling units throughout the state as a means to help address the housing shortage. And the definition of an accessory dwelling unit, or ADU, is a complete independent living facility for one or more persons on the same lot as a primary structure and can be attached or detached from the primary structure or home. They have also been known as second units or granny or nanny flats. All these laws have gone into effect over recent years, and to summarize, they limit the local agency's ability to restrict the development of ADUs in a variety of ways and provides for ministerial and streamlined approvals for ADUs and junior ADUs, which are attached to a primary structure ADU. And then I would note also that AB 671 requires every housing element to include a program that incentivizes and promotes the creation of ADUs that can offer affordable rents for very low, low, and moderate income households. And that's one of the programs that's in the housing element for the next 8-year period. Next slide.
Maybe you're, excuse me, just real quick while you're there. So when you say, go back to that one slide, sorry. Incentivize and promotes. What's the incentive? Is it a financial incentive? How do you do that?
Well, the state law leaves it up to the local government to determine how they're going to incentivize or promote. It could be through a deferment or waiver of certain fees. It could be various concessions on the permit review process. It really is up to the locality to determine how they're going to do that. And so the program that's in the housing element is a program to implement that program, but it the process of determining what that will look like will come before you at a later date and be presented by the community development.
And can that take a priority over normal housing?
I don't know. It doesn't necessarily take priority, but it's a program that would incentivize to the extent that there's interest in building ADUs.
It does take a priority?
Yeah. Excuse me. Just in a sense that we're required to have the plan checked out within 60 days of an ADU versus a standard home that doesn't have that requirement.
Really?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Can those incentives be different between incorporated and unincorporated areas?
Yes. This concerns the unincorporated county, but each incorporated city within the county also will have this program. Any other questions on that item? Okay. There are also most recently, there's a law, AB 686, with regard to affirmatively furthering fair housing that affects any housing element adopted after January 1st, 2021. And this includes a detailed assessment of fair housing. It must address 5 key fair housing issues: fair housing enforcement and outreach, segregation and integration, racially and ethnically concentrated areas of poverty, disparities in access to opportunity, disproportionate housing needs, and displacement risk. And then the adequate sites inventory, which we'll go over, which are the sites that are identified for meeting the regional housing needs allocation, must also be evaluated through a fair housing lens. Next slide. So for the adequate sites inventory, this again is the process of our identifying sites that will meet the regional housing needs allocation goals. There have been a number of laws passed that put in place rules for how the sites inventory will be identified. And then also SB 166, the no net loss law, requires that jurisdictions assess progress in meeting the regional housing needs allocation annually and make any adjustments if necessary to sites within their adequate sites inventory to make sure they're meeting their REMA.
So what if we're not?
If you're not,
yeah,
then you would be out of compliance with this law.
Sure.
So
he's going to leave it at that.
Mandate private property be used a specific way.
Any other questions? We'll go over the housing needs assessment. Next slide. So these are some key findings from the needs assessment. There has been a slight decrease in population from 2010 to 2019. If you look at more recent years through 2022, it's been fairly even. It's expected to decrease, according to projections, by about 5% over the next 20 years. Approximately 45% of the unincorporated population in Siskiyou County is age 55 years or older. So a large senior population. Also in the unincorporated areas, about 20% of the population has a disability. Next slide. About 21% of all units in the county are mobile homes or manufactured homes. The rental vacancy rate has been very low in recent years, around 2%. The average asking rent increased by 16.2% from 2017 to 2021. And the median sale price for homes has more than doubled from 2014 to 2021, from $150,618 to $302,042. Next slide. There's been a significant impact from wildfires on the housing stock. Number of fires over the last 8 years, including the Bowles Fire, Slater, Antelope and Lago Fires, McKinney, and Mill Fire, destroying a number of residential structures. Next slide. In terms of affordability, of renter households that earn less than $35,000 annually, 35.8% paid more than half of, or more of their income toward housing costs. 2,367 households earn less than $25,000, which is roughly equivalent to 30% of the area median income for a three-person household. These households can afford rent that is $346 less than the fair market rent for a two-bedroom in Siskiyou.
And this is in unincorporated, correct?
Correct.
Thank you.
And is that 35% of households that adjusted income, or is that gross?
Gross income.
Gross.
Mm-hmm. There are 60 publicly subsidized housing units in unincorporated county, and so compared to the 2,367 households that earn less than $25,000 annually, that's a significant gap. Next slide. We'll go over the adequate sites inventory on the next slide. So, again, the regional housing needs allocation, that's what's shown in the second column from left, or number of units allocated, is the two for very low and low income. So one site has been identified for the sites inventory that can provide 22 units to meet the RENA requirement. Next slide. We'll go over now the key actions in the housing program.
Where are those sites?
There's one site that's identified in the housing element. It's in Lake Shastina. And it would allow for multifamily, I think it's a little more than 2 acres, at about 10 units per acre density.
And is it privately owned? Is it zoned for it now?
It is, and it's currently zoned. One of the requirements is that identify sites are zoned residential, or that will allow multifamily residential to meet that very low and low income category. So we'll go over some of the key programs here. We've noted in red programs that are a state mandate, and there are a number of state mandates. First here is development and implement a streamlined procedure for processing affordable housing permit applications that meet the requirements of SB 35 and AB 2162. And these are laws that require streamlined processing for affordable housing and permanent supportive housing that address special needs, housing needs, or populations. There's a program here on 1.4.2 to offer public free permit-ready ADU building and design plans, to offer public free permit-ready single-family unit plans, and to help meet the needs of extremely low-income households, prioritize funding and waive building permit fees to encourage development of single-room occupancies or other small units with affordable rents.
So where does the state come in that relieves the builder, whoever they may be, of the regulations that they have to meet in order to build them? Bring the cost down?
Well, there's a process set up through the law gives the locality certain timelines and items that they need to look at when they're reviewing an application. The applicant or developer then needs to also comply with that law. And as long as they do, then there's certain requirements that are placed on the locality. It's mostly around the timing of processing applications.
No, I get that, but the cost of building, just to build, whether it's one of these ADUs or a single-family unit that you're talking about, there's regulations that drive the cost of those units up that even just a single-family residence now can barely afford. What does the state mandate in their regulations that relieve the builder of a low-income unit of some of those regulations so that it will provide a low rental unit?
There are some, the laws around accessory dwelling units are intended to reduce costs through by reducing regulatory barriers and some fees for certain sizes of accessory
dwellings. Are completely different from the cost of construction.
Right.
And
I'm just saying that is one way that some of the recent state legislation has addressed that. In terms of directly to cost of construction, I'm not aware of that. It's more around the cost of efforts to reduce the cost of...
It was land acquisition. The cost of land was so expensive that, you know, that's why they were pushing the ADUs, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's one of the reasons they push that is because it's a way to efficiently use land.
Because my perception of it is this wasn't geared for rural counties. This was geared for urban areas that have severe lack. Like we all do. We all have lack of housing. Mm-hmm. But you see where Supervisor Cox is coming from. There should be...
Yeah, we have a section of the housing element that deals with non-governmental constraints where we look at construction. It's certainly an issue of, you know, increasing costs, particularly over the last couple of years.
You go to a builder, you're going to get a cost per square foot. I don't care what you're building. And that's based on material cost and labor. And I don't know how someone would build one of these and then pencil it out for less than what you're currently paying.
Yeah, I mean, it continues to be built, but it you know, all depends on all those factors you're talking about, location.
Well, and then you have the school square footage fee that they charge as well. And depending on the area, it could be as high as $4, $5, $6 a square foot, which isn't going to be exempt from that, I don't think.
Come on, weigh in.
Yeah.
So I want to specifically point out a couple of programs that the state has enacted that maybe might answer your question. And as James mentioned, they are encouraging the development of ADUs. accessory dwelling units, and one of the things that they're doing to help that is specifically for development fees. If you have an accessory dwelling unit that's less than 750 square feet, so 750, so it would be 749 square feet or less, you do not have to pay development fees on that. Additionally, the state has also mandated that if the main dwelling does not have fire sprinklers, the ADU is not required to have sprinklers either, and that is a cost-saving measure. So hopefully that might give you a little bit of an answer to that question. Yes.
Just your name for the record.
Rachel Jarrett, Senior Planner. Thank you. Thank you.
And through the chair, my understanding is also, and maybe nobody has a misunderstanding about this, but these ADUs can be rented at market rate. This is a situation where you have to rent it below market rate.
Correct.
Right. So
the property owner determines how they're.
You know, I think it says in the element that you have to have it at X, you know, affordability. How do you do that?
There's a program to encourage ADUs that offer affordable rents to moderate, low, or very low incomes, but it's not a requirement. So that's a program that the county would set up to put in place certain incentives to someone who would want to rent to lower income households, but they're not required to. Okay, any other questions on these items? amend the density bonus provision in the zoning ordinance to bring in compliance with state law. Amend the zoning ordinance to permit employee housing providing accommodations for 6 or fewer employees by right in all residential zoning districts. And amend the zoning ordinance to permit low-barrier navigation centers by right in non-residential zones that allow multifamily uses per AB 101, and amend the parking requirements for emergency shelters per AB
139. So, I've got a question, but I think it's for this group over here. Does this supersede the Scott Valley plan? Sure, it seems to imply that.
That's the way I read it.
I'd have to look through the chair. This is Ed Kiernan. I'd have to look to be sure, but I would be surprised if it doesn't override the Sky Valley Plan and the other similar overlays.
Okay. You know, that comes with all kinds of water issues and density issues. Septic.
Yeah, I didn't say it was a good idea. I'm just
well, no, but you're going to ask me to make a decision here in a minute based on this.
Right, and Supervisor Howard, all those issues would be addressed through the Environmental Health Department prior to approving an ADU. In other words, if it's on an existing property, that piece of ground would have to be able to sustain both the water supply and also the septic design for that. Before we would sign off on a building permit application.
But the multifamily dwelling on a 5-acre parcel violates the plan right now.
Yeah.
Okay.
No permit for you.
Okay. Go to the next slide. These are more zoning code revisions that are all state mandated. transitional housing is defined in the state health and safety code as rental housing for stays of at least 6 months, but where units are recirculated to another program recipient after that period. So there's a requirement for allowing by right use in all residential zoning districts for transitional housing. Supportive housing, as defined in the Health and Safety Code, is housing with linked on-site or off-site services with no limit on the length of stay and is occupied by a target population of persons with a disability. The services linked to supportive housing are usually focused on retaining housing, living and working in the community, and or health improvement. So that is a program to amend the zoning ordinance to permit supportive housing by right in all residential zone districts. And then single-room occupancies are one-room dwelling units occupied by no more than two persons, which serves as the occupant's primary residence, and which has a minimum floor area of 150 square feet and a maximum floor area of 220 square feet. Meets ADA requirements, includes food preparation and or sanitary facilities. And that program is to amend the zoning ordinance to make SROs by right of residential use in the Res 4 CR and CU zoning districts.
But is that for commercial use? I mean, we've got those out there that are not permitted, but is that one of them, or is this strictly for, I guess, more long-term?
This would allow this would allow single-room occupancies to be by right, or in other words, not require a discretionary review or a conditional use permit in the Res 4, CR, and CU zoning districts. So those are, two of those are commercial zoning districts. The other is a multifamily residential zoning district.
So in essence, if I'm hearing that right, and I'm sorry you're the messenger, we're not trying to pick on you, but if you got a multi-family unit, and I'll take one of those units has three bedrooms, is this saying that one of those bedrooms, essentially a single room occupancy, could be used differently?
No, this is a housing type, single room occupancies, where there's independent living individual units that are basically like studio units.
Okay.
They're not subdividing
dwellings.
They're just creating basically studio units where you have basically one room and a bathroom. There's a kind of a small kitchen in there with that unit, and it's a less expensive housing type that is being encouraged for, you know, singles or couples.
So, and I'm sorry, you're the messenger again. But the last one down here.
Mm-hmm.
So we have a lot of developments that are governed by covenances and, you know, HOAs that do not allow manufactured homes, and it's recorded on your deed as such. Does this override those local?
I don't know, Haley, if you want to respond. I believe so.
I believe so, mm-hmm. Yeah.
This is nuts.
Question. The other zoning code revisions, we talked about removing constraints to the production of ADUs in compliance with state law. So that is there as program 1.15.1. Develop a formal program that offers incentives to property owners who develop ADUs that offer affordable rents. Very low and moderate income households. Amend the zoning code to allow mixed uses in appropriate commercial zones, particularly in the McLeod and Happy Camp areas. And use information from the short-term rental analysis to make revisions to the county's short-term rental ordinance. And I understand that the board is considering that in the January meeting. In terms of procedures, there's a program to implement the no net loss law to track number of units built, ensure that the arena is being met on an annual basis, adopt procedures to provide individuals with disabilities reasonable accommodation, and rules, policies, practices, and procedures to ensure equal access to housing. And then establish a fair housing complaint review process to make it available on the county website. Next slide. So go over the next steps for the housing element. Today, you are considering approval of a draft housing element that would then be sent to Housing and Community Development at the state for a 90-day review. And then the county receives a letter from HCD. We would then work with county staff to revise the housing element in response to HCD review and present it to board for consideration of adoption. And then after adoption, HCD has 60 days to certify the housing element. And that's our website where we've been posting all the materials, the community outreach notes and information that have come out of our close to 2-year process of developing the housing element. The drafts of the housing element and other background materials can be found there. So I wanted to make that available to everyone, and then we'll go to questions and comments.
Presentation of any correspondence?
Not at the clerk level.
A presentation of reports or arguments by county departments or other public agencies. Any proponents or opponents?
I have a comment from a member of the public that I don't know if you classify for or against. They would like it read into the record.
I should bring it up, Mr. Chair. A public comment being presented by
Mrs.
Jarrett.
Rachel Jarrett, Senior Planner. This letter is from Micah Dobush, D-O-B-U-S-H. It was originally directed towards the Planning Commission, but they asked that it also be read to you guys. Hello, Planning Commission. I followed the link to your website in hopes of reviewing the draft document and could not find the draft document. Please direct me to this draft document. Also, I have been sending your group information on successful tiny house community endeavors in California and Oregon communities. I am a low-income person unable to afford the high costs of buying a home or land in this low-income county. Building restrictions in California and Siskiyou County also prevent me from living in a tiny home on wheels. I would be able to afford building a tiny house that meets safety, fire, and basic building practices. I do have a friend with land where I could afford to park this home in Siskiyou County. The current county planning prohibits living in a house on wheels long term, and I see trailer park homes on wheels in Mount Shasta and other locations in Siskiyou County. Changing this county planning restriction would be a fabulous step in the direction of inclusive planning. One of the links I sent your group was about a manufacturing business of tiny homes using local people, where the future owners participating in the building of tiny homes and eventually participate in building their own home. This business engages the local indigenous peoples as owner builders. In this model, the county would provide the land and water access and a public restroom and outdoor picnic area for gatherings. Septic would be composting toilets, which require no septic tanks or extra water, a public restroom and outdoor picnic area for gatherings, much like a campground facility. Here, we would be providing safe, regulated, simple housing in small communities. All homes would function off the grid using solar and wind generators for power. This project would create a local manufacturing business that uses local wood and resources for building materials, maybe a portable mill on site, employment for local people, and job training and empowerment for the people living in these tiny home villages. Imagine this tiny home village as a model for future homeland security by disenfranchising the oil, coal, and electricity monopolies from the commons. Imagine a sustainable industry using the trees from our forests milled in our county for local building materials. Our forests desperately need management for fuels reduction, and that wood could be harvested for portable milled lumber, chipped for wood and concrete as insulating building materials, and wood for heating or operating a small biofuels electric generator in small communities. The biofuels could then become an emergency backup to the wind and solar installations in the unincorporated county tiny villages. In gratitude, Micah Dobush. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for reading that to the record. Any other public comment? Oh, Mr. Leppard.
Yes, thank you, Chair Chris, and members of the County Board of Supervisors. This is Jason Ledbetter, City Manager for the City of Wairika. We did send to the Planning Department our notes or letter comment from the City of Wairika. I'm just going to read that here for you today. So thank you for the opportunity to review and comment on the 22-2030 Siskiyou County housing element. As we all know, the housing crisis is a difficult and complex issue in our county. We will only find our way out through collaboration and shared goals. The City of Wairika has recently approved the 22-2030 housing element draft and hope the city and county housing elements can coordinate on housing project in the Wairika area. The following comments are recommendations to better coordinate housing programs between the City of Wairika and Siskiyou County. Inclusion of City of Wairika's specific program, like Program 1.3.2, that aims to meet biannually with the Karuk Housing Authority. The City of Wairika Planning Department would like to see the inclusion of a program to meet with the city on a similar schedule to identify opportunities for collaboration. A program to encourage communities within the unincorporated county with special water districts or water-focused nonprofit organizations that are experiencing water shortage or water supply failure to annex into the closest municipal water service area to prevent loss of clean drinking water for residents. A program to encourage higher density residential developments, 16 units or higher density, to occur within city and community service districts that have adequate municipal water systems to accommodate growth. The city is concerned that the county may allow higher density housing developments in the unincorporated area that could result in unstable groundwater supplies and water supply insecurity. We request policy 6.4 be amended to read, the county will address the displacement of residents due to environmental disaster and economic pressures and provide support for individuals experiencing homelessness and or food security. The wording, the verbiage is just slightly different than what you guys currently have in there. We request the inclusion of a program about home hardening to lower the risk of housing loss in wildfire events. We would like to see development regulations requirements for homes in high and very high wildfire severity zones that includes fire-resistant building materials, defensible space, and structure siding. We would like to see more programs under Goal 5 to allow small-scale wind production, solar production, and passive solar for housing developments. Excuse me. And I was really coming up here to make this last comment, which is probably the least controversial. And but since this wasn't read in or wasn't sent to the clerk, it was sent to the planning department, I read the whole thing. But this last one, I think, is very simple. And I have received calls from jurisdictions in some of your districts where they don't have the capacity to do the housing element. And so what we're asking for, if you hear nothing else from me today, hear this, please. The City of Wairika would like to see a program that commits Siskiyou County to preparing a multi-jurisdictional housing element in collaboration with all cities required to submit a housing element for the next update cycle in 2030. So essentially, you know, we have some agencies that, I mean, quite frankly, they're service districts. I mean, but they are cities in our community, in our county. They have contacted the City of Wairika because they don't have the funding or the capacity to do a housing element. So if we could see verbiage change, we're working with your OES director on the LHMP. That will be multi-jurisdictional. The request is just to have a multi-jurisdictional housing element in 2030 led by the Siskiyou County Planning Department. Those are my comments. Thank you very much.
Question. Is this from your council?
No, this is from me, the city manager.
Okay. And so your council hasn't approved that?
No, they have not, but just the authority granted to me as the city manager for the City of Wairika. I'm here.
They did approve those programs in their draft housing element,
is being addressed to this board supervisors, and usually it comes by form of council letter versus staff, and that's what I'm trying to find out.
No, this is addressed from me, so you guys do have a copy in your planning department, signed by the city manager, myself. A lot of these were addressed in our housing element, but this is a letter from me, not the city council of the city of Waurika. So.
Any other public comment? Mr. Dean.
Yeah, Rick Dean, Community Development Director. Just wanted to address one thing that Supervisor Topseth brought to my attention and would like to clarify in comments that we received regarding vacation rentals and accessory dwelling units. Just to clarify what they are, the differences. Knowing that we will be coming forward with vacation rental aspect later on, but I'll just put it in a nutshell and frame it for you best I can. ADU, accessory dwelling unit, vacation rental. They are both dwellings that have to meet the same standards of a house to be occupied. The vacation rental can be acquired through a use permit. An ADU, just a standard building permit. So those are the primary differences there. Code does not allow someone to build an additional structure and rent it out on a short-term basis. It has to be for a long-term basis. And as Cole mentioned earlier, you know, previously was the granny unit, second dwelling unit, and now the ADU unit. All basically the same thing, different name, but it's a second dwelling that's approved on a single parcel. That clarifies things well.
That helps. But the question was, are we allowing more vacation rentals through the ADU element, but that's not the case.
Correct.
No rebuttals. Any other public comment? Any online? There'll be no rebuttals since there's no proponents. And discussion by board members.
So what's the process now? Do we approve this or does this get continued on? Are you going to incorporate some of the comments that were made about the comments?
Yeah, so correct me if I'm wrong, but should this be approved today, then we send this off to HCD for their 90-day review. And then after that review process, then they bring back a comment letter based on the recommendations they'll want to see and changes.
Great.
I mean, I just heard Jason Ledbetter, the city manager, give some comments. Has that been incorporated, or do you need to look at that at all?
That has not been incorporated.
Not the wording changes that are recommended. So, if the board chooses to include those revisions, then we can make those revisions before sending it to HCD for review.
Well, you heard is what I heard. I mean, is there any value there? Do you see anything that could strengthen our housing element? I mean, you know, I want something that's going to pass muster at some point in time.
I think there's enough mandates for the state without adding that.
That's the question.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I could go either way with it. I think as you all know, the housing element is a huge document. There's a lot of stuff we legislatively have to do. There's a lot of state mandates in there. So I do feel that it's defensible with all of the mandates that are already in there.
I do. One quick question. Have you coordinated at all? Have you had conversation with the city about what their housing element looks like in order to make sure that we're not,
Sure. Only through our, not our public hearings, but we've had our, community outreach meetings, and through that process is really the only communication we've had, and then just informally talking with Juliana on the housing element.
So I hope that we're kind of trying to work in concert with each other instead of at odds.
Yeah.
And that, we're not going to have people running from unincorporated areas into the city or from the city outside, so that, just with the ADUs, just thinking about that alone, that what our rules aren't going to be totally off base with what the city's rules are, and, just trying to do this in a coordinated effort and not be at odds with each other.
Yeah, I would just add that part of our process was to review the draft, City of Wairika housing element as part of drafting this housing element. I would, and, you know, a lot of what you're talking about is going to be in the details and the implementation of the zoning code revisions and so on that will be reviewed and considered later. So I just encourage you to continue coordinating with the City of Wairika, particularly in the areas, you know, unincorporated areas around Wairika, to make sure that those,
well,
those
it's my district
programs work together.
You can bet I will be.
Well, you know, the bigger they're the most likely to have some kind of development. You know, there's no room in Mount Shasta for development. That's one of the problems with housing in general. There's no contractor coming in to build one house unless he's a high-end house builder. They're not going to build ADUs and workforce housing because there's not going to be that much of demand, quite honestly, in rural county.
Any other questions, Treasurer? Treasurer Haupt?
Thank you. So, what's the cost of implementation of this at the county level to us? Unfunded cost. I saw a lot of thou shalt. You will supply this free.
Yeah, I'm not going to have a definitive answer for you regarding that. Just other, knowing that any kind of legislation that comes down the line, there's always unfunded mandates associated with it. So, you know, essentially, processing time is accelerated. It's going to impact our office for the conversation.
Well, I think it's important. I mean, your department's already purchased already with the wildfire replacement that we saw on one of the slides.
Right? Yeah, and that's in place right now through right. State law.
Okay. It's probably a silly question, but if the state mandated it, why didn't they just implement it? I mean, really, what is our role from an approval standpoint?
Well, I mean, it's a state mandate passed down for the local jurisdictions to implement, right? So,
so what does no mean?
What does no mean?
Yeah.
No.
Well,
the consequences are you won't get the pass-through money that the state is going to have or allocate for certain programs.
Yeah, and other, you know, jurisdictions that, for example, haven't met the arena numbers and stuff. I know the state is now kind of using, you know, police power on those agencies and local governments and taking away certain funding sources and things like that. So that is, those are things that are starting to trickle down.
I'm sorry, this feels like extortion. I do have a pretty serious question about the Scottville area plan. And I do know at the state level, if the citizens vote on something to put something in place, the legislature cannot take that away. And the Scottville area plan was a vote by the people of Siskiyou County to put it in place. Mm-hmm. How can the state override that?
And I don't know, Bill, if you have any information on this. We need to nail down. When you say the Sky Valley Area Plan would be overridden, what particular aspect of it would be overridden?
The mandates for multi.
The mandate for multi-dwelling units.
Yes, and it's already zoned more restrictive than that.
And I was looking when the presentation was being made. There were some things which were mandated, and other things which were options. Mm-hmm. And I didn't catch whether the making available multi-dwelling unit was a mandate or if that was an option we had.
A mandate.
Okay. So with the, is it your my guess would be the state law would override it, but you bring up a new twist to it, which is that it was approved by the voters.
Well, it's not a twist. It's pretty important to the people who live there.
No. I wasn't suggesting otherwise. It's just not information I had coming into this. Mm-hmm. So I don't know, Bill, if you have any additional.
No, I would agree. I mean, I think the issue would be state law often at some point can the legislature can decide to pass a statute and actively preempt local regulation of an area. And best I know of, that would also include area-specific plan.
But statewide, they can't do that. I know on initiatives that are put before the voters, the legislature can pass that statute, but it has to go back to the voters before it can be implemented.
Right. Well, in part, that's a very particular question. My gut reaction is, without having studied this question, obviously, is that local measures passed by voters, including approval of a local plan like the Scott Valley plan, could still be preempted. You'd probably be more comfortable if I made a studied look at the issue, but my gut reaction is I don't see why it would be any different than preempting a local ordinance.
Yeah, I think what you may be thinking of would be a statewide initiative where the state legislature couldn't simply override it, whereas it's a local.
You're asking me locally to override a local initiative.
We can look into the issue. I'd be surprised if we get traction, but it's an issue I have to look into to be sure.
Okay. And then, sorry.
Oh, just Mr. Carroll, if you'd let us know for the record and for the recording that you were commenting. It was Bill Carroll, Deputy County Counsel. Thank you.
And then I didn't hear whether there was participation by the City of Fort Jones or Edna. And this and what was their participation of them?
Yeah, we focused outreach, of course, to the entire county, including in the unincorporated areas. I will have to look into, and I don't know if you know, Serena, any particular input from the cities. We encouraged input from all the cities in the county, but I don't recall any particular input from Fort Jones or Evans. Yeah, we had a pretty comprehensive public outreach process, and it included a large stakeholder list and email blasts and community meetings. We did a countywide online survey and so on. Of course, the participation is voluntary. We could go back and look at records to see what extent there was participation from. Are you wondering about residents of those areas? Yeah, we could look at that.
Anything further at this time? Supervisor Cobb said?
I think there's enough on our plate to have to deal with versus what the city of Arbor could propose, and it's only the city manager. That those elements might be in the city plan, but I'd have a little more comfort if it came from their council. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the cities are the cities and the county are the county. There are places that we can work together, and I don't disagree with that.
Sure.
But rules and regulations are going to be different, and vacation rentals are one that we differ on. Mm-hmm. And so I don't know that, you know, this multi-jurisdictional element is going to work. I guess what makes me nervous is usually when the county is the head of that, it usually takes more of our staff to implement, and mm-hmm. there's not a cost share, I guess is what I'm going to say that way. Even with what the state's throwing at us, there's not anything that's coming our way to say, yeah, here's, you know, incentivize a way to incentivize the elements to be proposed in your new plan.
Mm-hmm.
So there's enough to bite off right out of the get-go for me. There's quite a few things I have difficulty with, but because it's a mandate, here we go. We're going to have to accept it. So I'm do what we have to do, but nothing more beyond that is where I'm at.
Sure.
Any other comments or questions from board members? And then with that, there isn't, I'll entertain a motion.
So through the chair, one further question. With regard to the Scott Valley plan, though,
yeah.
How is that looked at within this element? I mean, if we approve this today,
mm-hmm.
we still have the opportunity to address the Scott Valley plan. And I guess, why wasn't it embraced in the element to begin with?
Sure. So today we're approving this draft to be able to be sent to HCD, and it will have to come back to you all for adoption. You know, and I don't know, James, do you have anything to add in relation to the Scott Valley area plan?
No, the housing element sets out programs and policies, but the particulars of how it will interface with the Scott Valley plan would need to be addressed at a later date. But it sounds like staff could also investigate this further prior to the housing element coming back to you for adoption.
I could, that was, I got ahead of myself. I was entertaining motion. One of those could be question for you, Haley.
Mm-hmm.
What is the deadline for this submittal with the state?
I mean, we're right up against the deadline for this submittal, right?
I saw on city council agenda, so that was I read. Yeah, doors too late.
Yeah, and I believe we have to adopt. So, you know, since they have 90 days to review, our adoption date is March, no, or May?
Yeah, it should be. I guess technically it should be adopted by the end of this year, 2022. There's what we understand from working with HCD and other housing elements, if it's approved and sent to them for review, then you're kind of in the timeline window. You're fine if you can get it, you know, approved and sent to HCD for their 90-day review before the end of the year.
And that was when I said entertaining motion, one of those thoughts was, you know, continue hearing if the board wanted to do that. Of course, that would have to be decided by the 13th. It would have to be decided at a regular meeting. It can't be a special meeting, what I understand of the rules.
Mm-hmm.
So there are options out there for colleagues. So I'll stop there. Did I answer? In terms of how for
Cobson? One other thing, if you're going to do additional investigation, what I'd like also to know. Is how does this interface our discussions with groundwater in Scott Valley, given that when we do our assessment work for development there, because of the water restrictions and the litigation, we've assumed a certain amount of build-out. If that build-out is now going to increase with the housing element, that's a different element for us from a consideration standpoint.
Okay, we will investigate that.
So you had identified in Lake Shastina a parcel that could take on 22 units. Does that basically satisfy the housing element where it would not even affect the Scott Valley plan?
Yeah, that's a good point. The regional housing needs allocation would be met by that one site in Lake Shastina. So the housing element is not mandating a certain amount of development in other areas.
That helps.
Particularly since we keep losing population.
Yeah.
That's, kind of
yeah.
That's because we're dying. Did you see that?
No, it's because we're losing houses and people scatter. And we can't build them fast enough. And because we don't have, quote-unquote, a builder with tradespeople that can build houses. You can get one off, but you can't get subdivisions built.
I beg to differ, because the bigger problem that they're having is, one, cost of construction itself, but... And
that's factored in there.
But planning is, you know, not, plug your ears.
Yeah.
We know our process isn't sufficient enough to meet the requirement of the builders. We already know that. And we're losing builders and their employees because of that. I mean, we even have homeowners that, you know, with this rise in interest rates, it's costing them more just on their mortgages because we can't meet the permit demand. And yet, this is going to come in and override all that, which is going to spin all of that other thing to the back of burner as well. So,
I would say also, because you and me have been here the longest, if we went through this before, and I'll bet you that some of these comments we're talking about are the same ones we're having right now.
Yeah.
Wishes of my colleagues to move forward.
I'll make the recommendation to move forward. I'm sure we can tweak it or investigate and do all the follow-up.
Yep, absolutely.
Okay, let's go to lunch.
We don't really have a choice.
Yeah, we don't. I'll second it, and I'm going to at least tee it up with that you're going to be looking at the Scott Valley plan, but if there's an element that satisfies that outside of their plan, I think that's the bypass. It's not designated to every single area in the county, if I'm understanding it.
A motion and a second. Roll call, Ms. Wendy.
Okay, Supervisor Howell.
I'm going to abstain until I have more information.
Supervisor Kopseff.
Aye.
Supervisor Valenzuela.
Okay.
Supervisor Ogren.
Aye.
And Supervisor Chris.
I'll be late. With that, I think the board staff reports. We'll go into closed session.
No board and staff.
Well, we could do it right now if everybody wants to. I get with it. We haven't done it yet. Unless somebody really wants to say it to the public here, that'd be fine.
I do have one item. Angela Davis, County Administrator. I just wanted to recognize Nancy Ogren's birthday. So we just want to celebrate her day of birth. And she, so I just want to make sure everybody is able to wish her a happy birthday.
Thank you. With that, is there any relevant board reports you want to give right at this point? Or other staff? All right, I didn't want to get that between the way of lunch.
Yeah.
That will go to close.